Hello.
Mandy's on the line too.
Hi, Mandy.
Hello.
All right.
He said Mandy the duck.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let me
read. Tell me everything.
Absolutely. All right, so that should be hitting you now.
Mandy, what's your role? I don't know if I've met you before. Oh, sorry. Are you there?
You're on mute, Mandy.
Sorry. You know, I adjusted my headset and muted myself. Sorry about that. I work with Robert Aldecor and Wesley for Kathy Carr, and I'm the program manager that's overseeing the onboarding part of SCU for the branch network expansion. So my reason for being here is just to kind of get an idea of where we are with everything, since I'll be shepherding most of the content through, you know, our internal reviews, compliance reviews, and stakeholder reviews. So
okay,
my part in this.
Right. And so it's internal, right? So I'm just curious the reason for...
Yes, it is internal.
Compliance?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But compliance still has to review it all?
Unfortunately, yes. We started this process thinking that just general content that we knew would normally need to go through compliance would be reviewed, and then it expanded to all new content, and then existing content, and now it's everything. And I think it's just so compliance has kind of the big overall view of what is being presented to the new SBs at SB University. So even though they do review everything, they don't review everything in the same style.
Right.
You know, there's a high overview, and then there's a true compliance review.
Gotcha. Okay. So the deck I sent, Wesley, I think addresses a lot of your directors, comments.
Yes.
But I thought I could step you through kind of what I'm thinking and where I'm landing with this, because I did swap out slides. I did add in some Katie Power
stuff. Yeah, I saw that. Looks good.
And I still don't know what to call this thing, though, because it's partly brand, but it's just, you know, kind of foundational understandings of, you know, the market and Schwab's role in the, you know, or perception in the market. So, I can play with a title. That's kind of what this is.
Sure. Okay. And know that, I can't remember if I shared this with you or not, but this week they were actually exposed to a little bit, and by a little bit I mean about 15 minutes worth of Schwab brand discussion. So they will have some familiarity with it, but not to the depth that I know your team will go to.
Okay. And I know, so the other piece is that, you know, I know Isaac McGuffin is doing something to the SC University related to in my appendix I had added things around the affluent-driven.
Right.
That driven mindset. And so, I don't know if I need to keep it here or get rid of it, but I know he's going to be doing the around kind of who these people are.
Right. Mandy, do you know if that was in week one at all?
I know it was a lot earlier than mine.
Right.
First branding piece? I'm on the calendar.
Right,
now.
It's about the driven, the affluent.
Our design target, affluent driven, and in fact, he was going to show a video that I made.
Mm-hmm.
Target.
What what they have in week one, like the fourth day, was communications, technology, and your brand.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and it was a 90-minute piece, so they probably didn't get too deep with that.
Who was Lisa Mears doing that piece, or do you know who was?
I don't know.
It might be interesting for me to. I just don't want to overlap unless you think perhaps I should.
Well, I think you're in a position to, again, stress more because what they're exposed to, and Mandy, I'm looking at the piece here. What they're exposed to is not very in depth.
Right, and I think
it's not in there's that's right. So there's I know Challenger Brand is part of the new employee welcome. There's a segment there.
Okay, which I don't really cover off too much.
Right.
Here, okay.
So what we can do after this call, I can find out a little bit more about what Isaac did, or either you can, Mandy, and we can get back to you and make a determination on whether or not you'll do that. Because I saw you put it in as an appendix, which I think is great. I think it'd be fine just right there.
Okay.
So for our time together now, though, let's go ahead and begin your walkthrough.
Okay. Great. So I'll work on a more reflective, better title, but what I wanted to do is start kind of at the 20,000 foot level around how the Schwab brand is perceived mm-hmm. in the market. And so we have a brand tracker study, and so slide 4 shows some of our Q4, some of our more recent data that shows, okay, in terms of unaided awareness, so who's top of mind awareness, would you think of? Schwab's at about, a third of investors are even aware of Schwab. And then consideration, who would you actually put the questions? The questions are on the bottom of slide 5. But, and then perception, we have all these attributes that we look at that we call, some of them we call our challenger attributes. So what is the business trying to do, and how are we, how are we performing? Are we moving the needle with investors, understanding that we have knowledgeable financial consultants, that we're a good place for people with complex financial issues, et cetera. And so we have our percentages here and our ranking, competitive ranking. And what I actually did here, beginning on slide 6, was swap out some of our, I think for purposes of these folks, maybe it's less about our ranking and the fact that we're still behind, the Fidelity, so we have made some real significant improvement in our brand perception in the areas we wanted to over the past couple of years. So, is it Christopher, your director, who said it was a little bit of a downer on Schwab? So I did kind of reorient it to be a little bit more of our brand story. And the brand story, while our ranking has remained the same, we have made some pretty significant improvements in how Schwab is perceived.
Right, and I think, and we're actually partnering with Chris. So Robert and Kathy Carr, actually, we're in Schwab business learning side, and Chris is on the business side in terms of branch network expansion. But we're partnering very closely, just as we are with you, to get this done. And I think to his point, because these are brand new FCs for them, at least half of them are coming from the outside, the other half being AFCs that have been promoted. That we don't want to give them a downer sense. So I really appreciate you massaging this so that our messaging is a little bit more upbeat. Even though it was totally all factual, totally all true, our goal, at least with the FCs, is to make them feel empowered by what Schwab has done and what we have gotten right.
Right. So yeah, that was a good I think that was a good nudge for me. So he's got kind of 10,000 foot level. He's got slide 5 that shows unaided awareness, unaided consideration, and you know, really the fight, I suppose, is persistence against fidelity. But Schmoff, you know, is you know, right up there in terms of right after fidelity in terms of awareness that's unaided consideration. Slide 6 then just shows, so we actually looked at numbers, so in what, 2012, maybe it was 13, we rebranded, launched, you know, the Own Your Tomorrow, and looked at our brand health over from just from that period on. And slide 6 shows some of the just the summary slides around how we've made some huge improvements in brand health, brand equity being a composite of a bunch of different attributes like familiarity, quality, uniqueness. And we've seen the highest levels of awareness and consideration during this campaign. So we launched something from that point on, we've seen some really nice movements in key metrics being among the affluent metrics there. In the middle offers objective advice, good place for complex financial issues, and then some directional improvements for, you know, the fact that we have SPs and we provide and then some really nice improvement if you look across some of our segments among younger investors. So this perception of brand health, so a composite score, and particularly we're starting to see the attribute of uniqueness rise for Schmoff. So hopefully that makes sense. And I don't know if I need this slide or not to point out that while we've made a lot of improvements, you know, the competitive ranking still is the same. It's Fidelity, Vanguard, Schwab in terms of that brand health. And then slide 7, we also do social listening in our looking at you know, online conversations and net sentiments, and this is part of our brand tracking study. So I don't know if it's how interesting it will be, but the just that we have fewer online conversations. I mean, the entire financial services market doesn't have. Not a super highly engaged like the Nike brand, et cetera. There aren't a lot of conversations around financial services necessarily among our competitive set. But the ones we do have are largely positive and are often related to, you know, a recommendation for Schwab. So we are tracking that as well as part of our brand tracking. You guys can tell me if slide 7 is a potential cut for Keith, but
no, I like it. And if I may go back just a little bit, because one of the things I think that we'll have to give a little bit of context is around how segmentation is done at Schwab. At this point, they will not have had any type of real exposure to segmentation at Schwab. So just for context's sake, we might want to include that in your delivery, as well as, and again, not knowing what you're actually going to say, in terms of the difference, like on slide 5, the differences between unaided awareness versus unaided consideration, because I think when you segue into slide 6, where you talk about the impact of On Your Tomorrow, do we know, or will you highlight on the two graphs on slide 5, where in that timeline at the bottom axis, On Your Tomorrow launched, just sort of to give them a visual that you can then segue into slide six?
Yeah, I can.
Okay, great. Okay. Because one of the other things, because we have a few coming from the outside, I'd even see you pausing at this moment and saying, you know, where, I'm referring to slide five, where do you see your previous employer, and what can you share about your perceptions when you were with them? I know that that's a bit opening a can of worms, but I think it'll be beneficial to seeing where they came from and where they are and what we're striving to do.
Do you think most of these people would have come from one of these competitors?
Right. I actually can get you the list, I think, of... Mandy, you may be able to lay hands on that sooner than I. We have the list of FCs and where they came from. A number of them, I think about six of the 17 or 18, came from Merrill Edge. So I know they're represented. And I know we have at least one TD Ameritrade in there. Do you recall any, Mandy, any of the others?
No.
Okay. And I know we have six that are internal promotions from AFCs to FC roles.
Let me go find that spreadsheet.
Okay, great.
And then I'll send it out to all of us.
All right, great, great. That'll give them some intelligence around who's in the room.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
And then on that slide seven, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Sorry, I'm going to include the roster as well, because we have a roster with...
Oh, I think that'll be even better. Yep.
Yeah, okay, cool.
Okay. So on that, you had asked about slide seven. I think that's good, because after your session, we actually have a competitive landscape being introduced there. And I know Lisa Hunt had wanted to plant seeds around the social networking piece. So I think we're safe with both of those, and perhaps that'll be another opportunity for them to say, how have you been using social networking to prospect before you came to Schwab?
Yep. The other point I might want to ensure that I include here, and not in this section, but is, and I don't think I have to is the importance of, you know, the reason people come to Schwab,
mm-hmm.
Which is related to referrals largely.
Right.
I have a slide, reasons people come. So I have a slide that I may want to include somewhere here. I think it's an important point that I think I have not addressed. I probably should. Unless I do here, let's see. So then I go into kind of target market perception. Schwab, so these athletes or prospects, you know, how do they perceive Schwab? And a lot of this work is directly from, we have a community of athlete-driven prospect community.
Right.
Where we, and I can talk to that. But the bottom line slide, I don't have the slide number. Slide 9 needs slide number. Okay. So, you know, not a lot of awareness. There's like this vague awareness of Schwab. They've heard of the firm, and then it skews positive. So it's like I've never heard anything negative about them. That they're, you know, vaguely open to learning more. A lot of them are aware of Charles Schwab, you know, the person, and really view the place as, you know, been around for a long time, ethical, stable relationship. And we hear this over and over and over again. We were just in L.A. and Chicago, and we're doing some prospect research of affluent prospects, and, you know, talk to them a little bit about companies that come to mind, what they think of them, and you hear kind of just say, yeah, I've heard of them, you know, but and that quite often that's the and the fact that they've been around, they're stable, they have people trust.
Okay.
So in flight 10, just kind of bullet it out, trustworthy and safe, reputable and caring. But, you know, on the, you know, kind of the neutral side, serving the masses, some people think they're premium, so there's two ends of that the spectrum, and I think this goes back to kind of our legacy perception as a discount broker, but then now our movement into wealth management. So people, you know, sometimes see us more the premium brand, sometimes see us more as a discount mass brand, so you're seeing a little bit of that confusion in the market. And then, you know, some lack of familiarity and lack of differentiation. So I think that's an important point when you're prospecting or when you're talking to you know, potential clients is what is the value proposition? How are we different? Because increasingly, people see the market as undifferentiated. They're all the same. Somebody called us the other day. They felt like Schwab might be the cousin of Merrill Lynch, which is interesting because probably 3-4 years ago, we were much more strongly seen as that, you know, discount brokers would not have been compared to yeah, so I don't know if I need each and every one of these slides here. So slide 11 goes into, you know, again, the strength, that longevity and stability, ethical relationship. And then the weaknesses, which is like, you know, I just don't know you too much.
Mm-hmm.
Some perceptions of IPs. And this was a couple of years ago, too. So, if it would be different now, I don't
know. Okay. And given, if I'm seeing that correctly, the June 3rd through, what year is that? Oh, June, okay, 3rd through the 6th, 2011, is that correct? And your footnote there on slide 11?
No, it wasn't that long ago.
Oh, okay.
Probably it was 13 or 14.
13 or 14. Years. Okay, that's not as bad then. Okay.
You know, I think the point being the fact that we have, launched so much around fee transparency and our low cost related to our funds and everything. A lot of, you know, the perception still linger of perhaps being a premium brand, perhaps having some high fees.
Okay.
Some prospects will still even mention $29.95 trade.
Mm-hmm.
I'll hear it. Which is millions of years ago, I don't know.
Right. But somehow it's still lingering out there.
Sure. I mean, it's still out there to a certain degree. And then I think perhaps maybe the more important point now is this undifferentiated. It's this notion that everybody's kind of, you know, about the same.
Right. And even going back to your earlier section on social networking, one of the things that I think the best social media managers do is to kind of drip out factual things about themselves, things that they would normally do under marketing, just as part of a local marketing plan. But, you know, on those platforms, kind of drip out the act that, you know, we're not $29.95 anymore, we're actually fill in the blank, you know, that kind of thing. Just a simple statement to help change attitudes, and even when they do searches, that they would find these types of things rather than any dated or aged out material.
Right. is this perception that we don't have, you know, you can't get a dedicated financial advisor at such a job, right? Because we're classically a self-directed firm, and or for that do-it-yourself type person. So perceptions still remain along those lines. So did you know, you know, that we do have, you can get an FCA at such a job.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And I've seen other campaigns where they even turn that into like a myth fact posting on a social media platform, or even a truth fiction, something along those lines, just to, again, get those facts out there to replace outdated or incorrect ideas about the firm.
people want to be respected. So I didn't explore here the rational barriers, because I think everybody knows what rational barriers are. But the fact that it's hard to do it is kind of a pain.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that there must be fees, I don't have the time to do it, etc. So, but 16 goes into what they seek in an advisor relationship. So increasingly, and see this from J.D. Powers, people are wanting partnerships. They want somebody to bounce ideas off. So it's less about just tell me what to do and I'm just going to hand you over my money, but I want to be part of that process. And particularly with this driven mindset, people are looking with that I may not be completely involved in my finances in a way that I should be, but I at least want, you know, kind of that one hand on the wheel and a partner to have help me navigate. These people are information junkies, so they love third-party validations. They want to see if somebody recommends something, they'll probably go online and look to see what else they can see related to a financial service partner, etc. They desire a high level of contact for the most part with their brokers, so this notion of, you know, I'm only going to call you once a year or talk to you once a year, while some people, that's okay, in general, our driven target enjoys a little bit more frequent contact with advisors. You know, when people talk about how they evaluate performance, so they talk about S&P benchmarks, but really, end of the day, they open their statement or they look at it online, and it, is it going up or down? And largely, our prospect pool is satisfied with current relationships. So it's not like there's a ton of dissatisfaction out there. They're going to need some sort of compelling reason to quit. So then this next section is Schwab's competitive strengths and weaknesses. So we do a benchmark study. I put in here the J.D. Powers stuff, which is clients only. The benchmark study looks at Schwab's clients plus everybody else's clients. And we did it last year ahead of our J.D. Power win. So it's a different sort of study than J.D. Powers in terms of the methodology and who we reach. But it did help us focus on, because we did a SWOT analysis, focus on some key areas that we were going to have to focus and shore up, so to speak, in order to win the J.D. Powers, you know, to improve in J.D. Powers. And the business did take the benchmark data and you know, put some focused efforts behind some of this information. And I think, while I can't directly correlate it to a J.D. Power win, I think it was, it did help us kind of focus on a few key things, like fee transparency, like perception of performance, et cetera. You guys can help me if you think some of this is too much, particularly if we then go into J.D. Powers. But
I'm really, you know, enjoying the deck, actually.
Okay.
I think it flows really nicely. Even though there is a lot of information, I think these SDs are sponges.
Yeah. Well, good.
Yeah.
So when we did this study a year ago, and we only do this study every couple of years, what we found that this past year was
right by then.
So the question is about, so I can, we can ask and I can talk about it more, but it's, you know, kind of the key metric we look at in terms of the satisfaction, loyalty of our client base. So how likely is it that you would recommend Schwab or whoever else? And then we do a calculation here. So our CPS, if you look at it competitively, is number 3 ranked behind Vanguard and Bridgestone. And the business was a little puzzled by this because our internal CPS, so as measured by client loyalty, is a little bit higher, and we were seeing some gains in CPS. But there were a couple different factors affecting movements in the market. One is competitors had done a better job in improving perceptions of portfolio performance, which is a key driver of satisfaction. So if I think my portfolio did better this past year, that has a correlation to satisfaction. And competitors did a better job of at least having those conversations around performance. And then there were some rebounds, some headwinds. So if you think about Merrill Lynch, Morgan, Wells Fargo, that were coming out of the financial scandal, they had no place else but up to go. If you look at Morgan Stanley at 8% 3 years ago, well, I guess it was mostly Morgan that really kind of pulled up. But even 5 years ago, really low scores, they kind of had no place else to go. But that and competitors were able to decrease detractors, so the people that
I think that points out our staying power and our stability, even amidst all of those things. So I like that call out. One quick update. So on the CPS, the most they will know by the time this comes around is that they'll know it as a metric. So there's really no huge focus on it. So it wouldn't hurt to just kind of give a quick primer on what the CPS is and how it factors into this this segment.
I guess what I don't, but I can find it out to what extent, because I think I'll have to see what the SB interaction is. For instance, is it part of their evaluation? I'll have to find out. Okay. So slide 19 then shows so detractors, those passive people, and then the promoters. And I'll call out on the previous slide how we define those. Either that or I'll put them on that slide. So promoters are those who say 9 or 10 that likely they'd recommend. Passives are the 7 and 8, and then detractors are 0 to 6. You can see, Fidelity, Morgan was able to improve the number of people that were promoters, and most of the competitors were also able to decrease the number of detractors. And Schwab's results was largely. Here's where I talked, slide 20. The increased perceived investment performance. So whereas from 2012 to 2015, Schwab's client base largely said, my investment performance has remained the same. You can see the percent that said it's better, and then the percent that said it's worse. Competitors were largely, a lot of us were able to get some pretty good jumps in their clients saying that they had better investment performance. Whether they really did or not, it doesn't matter necessarily. necessarily. I think it's the perception.
Sure.
So it's having that conversation around performance and how to setting expectations around performance, which is where we kind of went with all of this. Slide 21 then looks at some of our key segments. So if you look at people with investable assets of under 250K, 250 million, billion plus, you can see we had some, we did have some improvements in some key segments like that, kind of mass affluence, 100K to 249, active traders, some younger investors, and then among delegates. Overall, we did have some decreases in life stage, the folks in the middle age, that 40 to 55-year-old, the retired folks, so in the life balance. Slide 22 shows that, you know, what's it's the most important reason for CPS. So it's the question is, although more than one reason may apply, which of the following is most important in determining that CPS rating? And the thing that I think is interesting about this slide is that the most important reason for being a promoter is very much aligned with your business model. So if you're Vanguard and Scottrade, you can see everybody said it's the most important reason for my rating is commission fees and rate. And that's kind of what they're known for. You know, look at TD, where it's commission fees and rate, but it's also that website. It's tools. It's active, you know, active trading tools. And then if you look at the far end, you can see all the SPVs, full commission brokers, where it's all about that investing guide. So it's not commission fees and rates that's driving loyalty and satisfaction. It is the fact that I'm getting guidance. Schwab and Fidelity are interesting because we kind of service everybody. Yes, and so we don't have that huge percentage of people that take commission fees and rates. We've got a pretty good spread of reasons across all these things that are driving oil pitch costs.
Unfortunately, I need to drop. So.
Okay, thank you, Mandy.
Yep.
I'll have to pick up for the last piece, but let me know if you have any questions, comments.
Yeah, I will do. Thanks. Bye.
All right, bye-bye.
So the next two pages, I know Chris had, so slide 23, Wesley, is strength, competitively. So where are some key strengths of providers? Slide 22 is areas we need to improve. So that's why Schwab has fewer bullets, which is good. And so one of our strengths on slide 23 is this good value for the money. So even though we need to improve on reasonable fees and portfolio performance, look at where good value is for the money on slide 24. It's an area almost everybody else needs to improve on. And it's a competitive strength for us. So that's why we say Schwab can capitalize on its strength of offering a good value, at least to win against kind of the SP line. The 25 is our SWOT analysis, and I actually took out one of these slides. Strength.
I suppose if there's any room for streamlining, it would probably be in the CPS area, only because of Chris's comment about accentuating the positive kind of thing. Again, all true information, but I'm wondering, number one, what would be the expected reaction from the FCs, given that they're new to the firm in terms of this role. I'm not saying we don't need it. I'm just kind of curious. We need to be thoughtful about how best to leverage this for the new hires. What can they realistically do? Is it, for example, something we can encourage them to have conversation with their branch manager about? I'm just kind of trying to think out loud about how they could best leverage, especially all of the improvement, all the detractor, all of the not necessarily positive content that's in this section.
Yeah, so I think, I could probably streamline this a little bit. I think the diagnostic, so where I left it in was to dial up the diagnostic element of the CPS. So the fact that we do some things right and good.
Right.
But that we need to improve in areas like slide 20, this investment performance and decreasing on slide 19, track.
Right. They will be in, and I don't know if I told you all this, they will be in practice by this time. They actually start, get their practice assignments next week. So they will have been in roughly 3 weeks by the time they get to this content. So that's why I'm kind of on the fence about what, you know, how much of this they'll actually need to be able to understand and engage on versus having conversations with their branch manager or even with your team.
Sure. Yeah, so I think, and part of this lends itself to maybe it's 23 and 24.
Mm-hmm.
That's perhaps the heart of it, which is what is the value proposition?
Right.
How do I compete against a Merrill, a Wells, a TD, and a Morgan? It's going to be, you know, stuff on 23. For excellent customer service, easy to do business with, good value for the money. It's that kind of stuff. And then where are the weaknesses that I can perhaps, you know, dial up or hit, you know, have my elevator speech or whatever ready if I'm going up against somebody at Wells Fargo. On slide 24, people don't perceive they have reasonable account fees. They don't perceive they're on the side of the investor.
Mm-hmm.
They're not a good value for money. Same with Merrill, you know. So it's that kind of stuff.
Right. That's good. Because now I'm thinking a little bit differently in terms of the barriers, going back to the earlier barriers conversation, because what I'm trying to get in my head is, okay, the CPS information, how can we best leverage that in terms of intelligence when we're out prospecting, when we're having those prospecting conversations? And I think you just did that for me. So, okay.
Yeah, so I can orient my comments. And I think maybe I'll take out a slide or two here that kind of dial that message up. So then this section is J.D. Power. So I thought, well, we can end on a real positive note. Although, just so you know, I mean, this isn't, just much of my deck has been focused on prospects or mm-hmm. our clients versus their clients. I suppose this is still our clients versus their clients. But fact of the matter is, nobody knows that we won J.D. Power.
Right.
And nobody cares.
Mm.
And I'm just kind of being blunt.
Oh, sure,
for
sure.
That's a marketing tool, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But that wouldn't be my lead in with somebody I was prospecting with, right?
Sure, okay. Well, I will leave it to your discretion as to whether we even bring that up, because that's a good point. If when we're talking about the prospect, particularly the affluent prospect, and in terms of what our conversations need to look like without them. If this doesn't strengthen it, then by all means, we don't have to leverage it unless it makes sense.
I think the good thing here, and it, maybe it's more of a feel-good thing.
Sure.
For you know, our marketing and our branding people, but it is the fact that we made this shift several years ago to go into wealth management, go in, if you think about this continuum, to move from a discount broker to a full-service, you know, commission broker, and to directly go head-to-head with FCB. And this is acknowledgement that we've done it. And so it's huge in the way of, you know, shifting perceptions, making people think perhaps differently about Schwab. There was, you know, 3-4 years ago, there was absolutely no way we were even included in this study, much less we would have won it. And you know, in a few short years, we were able to win it.
Okay.
So I think that's an important thing.
Right, I agree.
Yeah. So, I mean, maybe that's, you know, how I couch it. And then I left in, mostly the things I left in were more diagnostic. So if you look at, I got to do my page numbers here. Let's see.
Yeah, so this is the why. I got it. I'm seeing page numbers on the bottom left there. Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah. So, 28, the fact that Schwab was highest ranked, you're actually technically not supposed to say win. Highest ranked, and highest ranked by quite a lot. And look at the differentiate, you know, the number of points difference.
Right.
The fact that we would win, over Fidelity and some of the other ones that we don't have, we're not. You know, our rank isn't highest among, for brand perception. This is a good acknowledgement.
Right.
This slide then were more about the shift in the market, the fact that, and I had mentioned this before, but J.D. Power kind of highlights it, the fact that there is a shift in mindset and expectations within the market towards more of that validator, which is advisor acts as a sounding board for my ideas, but I make my own decisions. You know, it's that notion of partnership.
Mm-hmm.
Are starting to see more of those people in the market. And on slide 30, different things become more important. So performance and fees, and with these types of prospects for clients, become more important.
Yeah. I like that.
Okay, good. I left in, let's see, 31, 32, I thought, again, we're diagnostic and we're things that FCs can influence, and that is, you know, this notion of goal-based investing and how Schwab is doing. We're outperforming peers, but there's always, you know, that always room for improvement. Goal-setting, implementing strategies. I think this kind of our emphasis around getting people on plans, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the importance of that. And how it affects. So if people are doing, if they're doing stage one, stage two, stage three, how much that improves the perception. Part of the reason we won J.D. Power's or were highest ranked was some improvement on this notion of fee transparency. The big issue in the industry, and Schwab made huge movement in you know, being providing this fee transparency.
And they are exposed to that in their they were exposed to that in the first week. In terms of the Schwab Promise and accountability guarantee, So they have some exposure there.
Yeah, so tangible evidence that it matters.
Right.
Right. In terms of increasing satisfaction.
Right. And I like that because there was a little bit of bewilderment on behalf of the FCs, because some of them looked at the accountability guarantee, for example, as if it were, you know, well, even if my recommendations don't work out, we'll give you your money back, and that kind of undermines, at least from their perspective, undermines their advice. And so we had to, you know, position it and help them understand the intent of it was not to lead with the guarantee, but it was more of a just a tool in the advice toolkit.
Yeah. And again, I mean, I think this is, you know, kind of more what works with existing clients versus a prospecting message, which is what, you know, we talked about more in the competitive section in terms of what do you need to say to demonstrate.
Right,
to
right.
Be attractive to a prospect. This is more acknowledgement that
it
know,
works. Okay.
How do you keep people engaged and satisfied?
Right. Okay. And we're at 2 minutes before the top of the hour. I want to be respectful of your time. Are you okay, or do we need to go ahead and wrap up?
I do have something else I'm going to have to wrap up. But
let me then ask two quick things. Number one, how much time do you think you'll need to deliver this?
You know, I can go as deep or as not deep. 45 minutes to an hour, I can do.
Okay.
Probably maybe an hour.
All right. We have 90 minutes blocked, so we can. That's how much freedom you have. One of the second
okay.
thing was we have the 90 minutes in because, as I did a little bit earlier, we want to break up the delivery a little bit in terms of giving them some interactions. One of the lessons learned from the first couple of weeks has been they like interactions. And so, like when I said back on slide 5, explain differences between the two graphs, and then turn around and ask them, where do you see your previous employer, you know, on this graph, how you think they got there, what kind of activities were you involved in, even going down to slide 9 around the barriers. Which of these barriers resonates with you as a, you know, FC versus that resonated with you with any previous prospecting activities. Same thing
yeah.
with CPS. Yeah. So just breaking it up with some time for them to have some discussion, I think we'll pretty much eat through the additional time we have there. And then just leave a, you know, 5-10 minutes at the end for Q&A, additional Q&A. How's that sound?
Yeah, I think it's good because, yeah, if we do have that dialogue, then it could stay.
Okay, great. So if that's already built in, then I think we're good. So the deck that we have now, are you okay with us going ahead and getting it through, even though I know it won't necessarily be in final state? And they're aware that they being our SMEs, Chris Miller and Robin Sherwood, as well as Christine Mills in compliance, they are very aware that there are some minor tweaks that will happen. But are you okay with the deck as is, or should I give you a little time to make any tweaks that you need before I get it submitted for those two sets of reviews?
Yeah, I think I'm pretty good. Why don't I spend till the end of today? Now that I've got my head in it.
Okay.
And then get something back.
All right, great.
You know, next.
All right, I appreciate it.
Okay.
This has been great. This has been great. And thank you for taking the time to do this. Now, is it just you coming out, or will Melissa join you as well?
I think I might have Melissa on the phone.
On the phone? Okay, great.
Video.
Oh, that's right. Okay, yep. We're working that out now. Right now, we have Link currently being used, but I know Link went down for inexplicable reasons last week, so we're trying to come up with a backup using WebEx. So we're working through that, and should have all that worked out by the time June 1st arrives.
Okay.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a good day.
All right. You too. Bye-bye.